After a summer of frustration after frustration after frustration, Mexico dropped its World Cup qualifying roster over the weekend, and there are some big, I mean big names missing. We try and figure out how El Tri can make up for a lot of lost star power. No shortage of star power for the U.S. men, led by Christian Pulisic, who is back to training in Nashville after some time in quarantine. Coming up, we'll ask if Captain America should really be America's captain. And stop me if you've heard this before. Another El Tráfico for the ages. LAFC and the Galaxy putting on an absolute show in a rivalry that never disappoints. All that and much more starting now on Football Americas. Welcome into the show. Alongside Hercules Gomez, I'm Sebi Salazar. Herc, I was just thinking about it. What a weekend we had. MLS Rivalry Week finishing up with a blast. We had number one against number two down in Liga MX. Plus, we got World Cup qualifiers starting this week. Has there ever been a better time in our little corner of the soccer universe?
Not yet. It seems like it gets better and better. You said Mexico had a frustrating summer like three times. Are you okay?
I'm okay. I think, are we in fall yet? Have we turned the calendar to fall? When is the first day of fall? We should find that out. We're going to be discussing all of that and much more on today's edition of the podcast. By the way, the podcast today will be historic because for the first time ever, we're going to have exclusive bonus material in the pod. You're going to hear a Julian Green interview a little bit later in this show. You hear about 9 minutes of it here. You're going to hear the full 26 minutes until literally Julian Green was like, I'm done with you, Herc. He pulled the plug on his internet and ended the interview. But we got a good 26 minutes out of him, didn't we?
We got a great 26 minutes out of him. We covered everything. Be sure to check out the podcast. Keep us going because it gives me a job. So I'm happy.
Yeah, that helps too, right? You can find it in the ESPN FC, in your Apple Music, your Spotify, wherever you do get your podcast. All right, let's start the show then with the big news from the weekend. Mexico, after a long, long wait, finally dropping their Olympic roster. 28 players named for Tata Martino. Now, at first, Herc, we saw Raul Jimenez in the list. Unfortunately, today we find out he's out of the list. Apparently, Wolverhampton is not going to let him go because it would cost them another 10 days of quarantine on the back end. So Raul Jimenez then replaced by Santi Jimenez. But really, the story with this Mexican roster, my goodness, is who's missing. No Chucky Lozano, no Hector Herrera, no Diego Lainez. On top of the aforementioned, no Raul Jimenez. This is crisis alert, isn't it, for Mexico?
Yes. If Mexican fans, pundits, either literally grasping at straws or trying to point the finger, trying to figure out what's going on. There have been conflicting reports about Raul Jimenez. Some have already closed the door. Some are leaving a sliver of hope that Wolverhampton and the Mexican Federation come to some sort of agreement and that Raul Jimenez can make that trip. It doesn't look good. It's a lot of star power. You mentioned the star power. That's a lot of veteran presence right there. That's a lot of important players missing for the Mexican national team.
So Mexico, of course, opening at home on Thursday against Jamaica before road trips to Costa Rica and Panama. For more on this roster, let's welcome in our good friend Mauricio Pedrosa. Really much more than a good friend here on Football Americas. We were celebrating in our production meeting. We've hit like 50 or 51 episodes of the show. Mau, without you, I think we would still be somewhere in the 30s. So I hope you truly feel at home here in your segunda casa.
I feel at home. I think of you as my parents, not as my brothers, because you guys are older than me. But I do feel at home, and I'm always happy to be here.
Good to have you.
All right, so let's get to our segment here. Three questions on El Tri Mexicano. Let's start with Raul Jimenez, who we thought was going to be a part of this group when the roster first dropped. But as we just explained, he has since been replaced by Santi Jimenez. So this is a player who, look, has only played, Mau, a handful of times since fracturing his skull a little bit over 9 months ago. How much will he actually be missed, do you think, in these three matches?
Not much, to be honest with you. I think the Federation, the national team, Tata Martino, they had to take their shot and call him up regardless of what the situation in the end would look like. And now it's looking like he's not going to play the first three games of the World Cup qualifiers. So the first game versus Jamaica at Estadio Azteca, no fans in the stands, but it shouldn't be a problem. You guys just touched on how many players from Jamaica are not going to be able to make the travel. So Mexico should win that game. And then playing at Costa Rica, at Panama. To be honest, not the best versions of either of those national teams, so it should be enough. It does come as a surprise that the replacement for Raul Jimenez will be who we call the big baby, El Bebote, Santi Jimenez. But Mexico should be all right without Raul Jimenez, because the plan B is Rogelio Funes Mori, and we all know what Tata Martino thinks of Rogelio Funes Mori. He already proved himself for the national team during the summer. I know he didn't score as many goals as we would have expected, but he looked okay. So plan B should be enough for Tata Martino for this first three games of the qualifiers.
The thing
Mark,
here,
you agree.
The thing here, Seb, is not if he will be missed, because you have enough talent to get you over the hump versus a Jamaica team that's going to come in limping to Estadio Azteca. And yeah, maybe not the best versions of Panama and Costa Rica, but they are playing at home. The thing is here, if you're Tata Martino, this is a missed opportunity of having Raul Jimenez, a player who's shown you that he's physically capable now of the expectations of the Premier League, to get himself back in a place where he's comfortable and maybe can be confident. When you're a striker, confidence is key. What better way to gain confidence if you're already playing at the Premier League level than these tune-up matches? Like boxing, a tune-up fighter, a tune-up match. You get Raul Jimenez playing against lesser opposition, because that's what CONCACAF will be compared to the Premier League. Maybe a goal or two, his confidence comes up. This was a great opportunity of Tata Martino seeing exactly for himself firsthand where Raul Jimenez was at physically and mentally, and now he won't have that.
To me, this comes to how much faith you have in Rogelio Funes Mori, and I gotta say, after the Gold Cup, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm probably somewhere between a 5 and a 6. I look at those knockout round games. He played 280 minutes, Rogelio Funes Mori, against CONCACAF competition, right? Basically the same type of level he's gonna be going against here. Honduras, Canada, US, he scored one goal in 280 minutes. I'm sorry if I'm not 100% sold on Rogelio Funes Mori. And beyond that, I would say this. Guys, Wolves are not starting Raul Jimenez as a charity case. They're starting him because he's the best option for a Premier League team. Mexico is not deep enough now for a guy who's the best option for any Premier League team to be just thrown away and discarded and say they're not going to miss him, right?
I agree with that. You're not wrong. But at the same time, I'll say this. His performance during the Gold Cup, and I know from a number nine, the thing you come to expect is goals, right? That's how we're going to evaluate a player playing that position, the number nine position. But remember what Tata Martino expects from a player like Raul Jimenez and a player like Rogelio Funes Mori. He expects those players to be more involved in the creation of offensive play and also trying to finish. So the fact that Rogelio Funes Mori was a good fit, it gives me the confidence to believe that with him, it should be enough to get at least 7 out of those 9 points in play, which obviously playing CONCACAF qualifiers, we all know that, it's crucial how you start. Now, if Rogelio Funes Mori is not good enough, then you have Henry Martin, who played well with the Olympic team and who has been playing well with Club America and who can also be part of this build-up, creating opportunities for the team. So, again, I understand what you said, what Herc said about trying to get Raul Jimenez more involved and getting the confidence that he's been missing for almost a year. But it's World Cup qualifiers. You need players. You need players that are grinders, and that's going to be Henry Martin and Rogelio Funes Mori. The team should be okay without Raul Jimenez.
Henry Martin is not actually a goal scorer at the senior level. And Raul Jimenez, like, newsflash, the most productive year and a half for Raul Jimenez in his career was this last year and a half before he got injured, when he was scoring goals with the Mexican national team and with Wolverhampton. Before that, he was exactly the same type of player that we're talking about, Henry Martin and Funes Mori. He was a very good nine to help others out, but not necessarily productive.
Let's get to the second of our three questions here on the Mexican national team. Well, we know there's a lot of star power missing, right? No Chucky, no HH, no Diego Lainez, no Jimenez. But there were some stars at the Olympics as well. Guys like Sebastian Córdoba, Luis Roma, Alexis Vega, the players that you see there on the screen. Herc and Mao. And Mao, I'll start with you. Is that enough? Is there enough from those Olympic guys stepping up to the senior national team now to replace the superstars that are missing for Mexico?
Yes, yes, it is enough.
Optimista.
It has to be
optimista
enough.
Llega Mauricio.
I mean, for how many years are we going to take from Andrés Guardado? How many more games are we going to demand from Héctor Herrera, from Jonathan Dos Santos, Now it's the time to create a change. And it is time to take advantage of this generation who played really well under Jimmy Lozano. And I was trying to come up with a lineup using most of those players. I'm very sorry that Johan Vázquez is going to miss out because of an injury. But to me, he has to be a starter next to Néstor Araujo. I'm pretty confident. Luis Romo, I know he's not under 23, but he was part of that Olympic team. He could be a starter for this national team. No question that if there is no Héctor Herrera, Sebastián Córdoba has to take the spot. No Chucky Lozano? No problem. Alexis Vega can fill that spot. And if Tecatito Corona doesn't show up, by the way, Tecatito Corona did not make the flight from Portugal to Mexico. He was expected and he was not there. Then you have Uriel Antuna and Orbelin Pineda, who was part of the Gold Cup team. It's time for a change at the senior national team from Mexico, and they have to use those players that won the bronze medal at the Olympics.
I understand it's time for a change, but do you want to move on from Héctor Herrera? I mean, what he can do on the field, do you want to move on from Chucky Lozano, how effective he can be for me? Do you want to move on from Diego Lainez, who's been probably the best 12th man in CONCACAF when it comes to this summer, and this summer, especially for Mexico? Do you want to move on for those players? Do you want to go to unprovens like Alexis Vega at the senior national team level, like Sebastián Córdoba, like Luis Romo, who's 26, who's been very good at Liga MX and very good U23 tournament at the Olympics? I think there's a time to move on. There's a way to progress to that, if you will, coming to the ages and having the next generation step up. But it's not in World Cup qualifiers. You don't want to start off behind the eight ball. This goes by very quickly, and we've seen it before. You don't start off with the right foot like Mexico have done, like the U.S. can. It hurts you.
Can't deny it's a huge opportunity for these guys. I mean, Luis Romo's never getting in that starting midfield with Achiacha in there, with all the depth that they have in midfield. But I could see Luis Romo getting an opportunity and becoming a lockdown starter for Tata Martino with as well as he's played at Cruz Azul. The other two guys, I want to see them just for the shop window. I know we're coming to the end of the transfer window here, but Córdoba and Alexis Vega for me are two guys that are running out of time. They're 24, 23 respectively. I want to see them get minutes here because I think if it doesn't lead to a move now, it could lead to it in the winter. Those are two guys who are ready to move, and I think sometimes the international game is the only way to really spark that interest. Let's go to the third and final question here, at least the three questions that have to do with El Tri. Let's talk snubs. Specifically, Carlos Salcedo. We know he had a very public dust-up with one of Tata's assistants at the Gold Cup, at the final. And Gerardo Arteaga, who we remember turned down not just the Gold Cup, but the Olympics as well due to personal reasons earlier this summer. Mal, there's always a little something more with these Mexican national team call-ups. Is there more to the story here than just sporting decisions when it comes to Salcedo and Arteaga being left off?
Yes, no doubt. And I'll start off with Carlos Salcedo. Us three, we were at the Gold Cup final, and we all saw that video of Carlos Salcedo having a very, very uncomfortable conversation with Jorge Tyler, who's part of Tata Martino's staff. And it was later reported that the assistant, Jorge Tyler, was very upset because Salcedo didn't look ready. And it's not that he just didn't look ready to jump on the field when Héctor Moreno needed to be subbed, but there was also part of his behavior during the Gold Cup that led the coaching staff to make this decision. They just didn't want him to be around the national team for a World Cup qualifier. It concerns me a lot with Gerardo Arteaga's case because Carlos Salcedo, there are three or four players who can play that position, but there are not many left backs at hand for Tata Martino. And Gerardo Arteaga has been playing really well. And the report also says that, the fact that he turned down those opportunities because he wanted to be ready to start the season at the Belgian League also was a cause for concern for the coaching staff, and they have decided not to call him up. There is no tactical reason to have him missing this very important game, but it concerned me that now we have Chicharito Hernandez, Carlos Vela, Salcedo, Arteaga. It was Tecatito Corona at some point.
Ache.
Non-sporting decisions. Yeah, Ache. So it's very concerning that these things keep happening to Tata Martino.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was going to go along that sentiment. Also, you can include Jesus Gallardo, who there have also been multiple reports that sure. Tata Martino has been unhappy with his performances and his demeanor as of late as well. Going to Arteaga, because I think Carlos Salcedo is pretty evident. He didn't have the greatest of tournaments. And then he had that sideline incident with the assistant coach, and now he's not here. I've seen players play themselves out of starting 11s for their playing ability, but never a player play himself out of an actual 18 or 23, if you will, in this case. So that leads me to believe it's attitude. Leads me to believe it's Tata Martino not liking what he sees from this player on the attitude side. Arteaga is a whole nother thing because we don't really know why he declined the call-up. We've heard Arteaga himself say, you wouldn't understand. It's very personal reasons I won't get into right now. So it leads me to believe it has nothing to do with him wanting to stay at Genk. It's him not going to the Olympics. And for whatever reason, and I'm with right here on Mauricio 1,000,000%, is Tata Martino has these attitude problem tendencies with players. Mm-hmm. First it was Tecatito Hernandez, and then he got into it with Sergio Conceição. Then it was Héctor Herrera, and then he didn't call him in for a while. Then it was Miguel Layún and Chicharito. Then it was Gallardo. Then it was, now it's Arteaga. It's always something.
Carlos
something
Vela.
Is going on. Carlos Vela is always something. That should be worrisome if you're a fan.
Let me ask this question then, and I'll pose it to you, Mauricio. Is Tata Martino, with all these bans, with all these, you know, putting players on kind of his bad list and not calling them in, is he going too far, or is he actually doing what the Mexican national team has needed to be done for the last 20 or 30 years? Because we always hear of the ill discipline of the Mexican players, especially when they're with the national team,
there
Mauricio.
He is.
So
there you
is this
are, Seb.
Actually Tata Martino doing the dirty work that hasn't been done for the last couple decades?
Yeah. That's an excellent question, and we've had it both ways. Because with Juan Carlos Osorio, the word on the street was that he was very permissive with the players, right? So it was a very relaxed discipline, and he was okay with it as long as he saw results on the field. Tata Martino is having this no-nonsense approach to call-ups and to how he handles the team during long tournaments like the Gold Cup and now World Cup qualifiers. So I believe that Tata Martino has realized that he has a core that he's going to keep. And that starts with Guillermo Ochoa, Héctor Moreno. HH eventually will come back to the team. Raul Jimenez eventually will come back. So as long as that core stays okay with his decisions, he's going to be fine and he'll have no problem leaving players out like Arteaga and Carlos Salcedo. But yeah, I mean, I believe that's going to be his approach. And if he works on the field, if he gets 9 out of 9 points, he's going to keep doing it.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes Thursday in Azteca against Jamaica. Mal, while we have you here, let's talk some Liga MX. Couple of big games over the weekend. We'll focus on Chivas Necaxa. Not so much a big game as a controversial one. Chivas won 2-1. Their first goal, shouts of a Pollo Briseño handball, like very, very early in the build-up. But we'll leave that for now. The second Chivas goal comes in the 103rd minute. That's correct. That's how much stoppage time there was. It's on a penalty. It's not just any penalty. It's on the second try because Angel Saldivar had his first shot saved by Luis Malagón. Are Chivas, and this is probably a complaint that has been leveled against every big team in every league in the world, is Chivas getting special treatment from the Liga MX referees?
Sebi, are you speaking of the famous Chivar?
Chivar,
as we call it in Mexico? No, I don't believe that's the case. Yes, you know, important teams, bigger teams are always favored just because. And it happens everywhere. It happens in the Mexican League. It happens in the Premier League. It happens in Spain. Now, in this very specific game, I agree with the decision. To me, it is a penalty. And then they had to replay the PK because Malagón had two steps off the line. And the rule is the rule. It looks weird. Yeah, it does, especially because that wing actually can keep Victor Manuel Bucetich employed as Chivas manager. It was controversial, but there have been some other instances in which Chivas has been affected by VAR decisions. So I do not believe there's a clear line to favor them with decisions like this. But the big consequence to me, it is the fact that Bucetich at least bought some time with that victory against Necaxa.
This is an evident, obviously, of course they're being, but you could, you've already mentioned, you can go Barcelona, Real Madrid, you can go United City, you can go any team in the world, big league in the world, you're going to find these tendencies with the big teams. Unfortunately, right now, Chivas is still considered a big team, even they don't play like it. This is why we have to go into the 113th minute. I mean, I'm sorry, 13 minutes, 103 minutes, 13 minutes after the 90th minute is when this penalty is taken. It's when the call is made. Why are you doing 13 minutes of actual extra time? Of course this happens. This happens all over the world, and Chivas is not the exception. I thought it was a very soft penalty call. Anytime you slow things down, it looks worse. This rule is the most idiotic rule, the penalty kick rule, with the goalkeepers are already at a disadvantage. They want to put them more at a disadvantage. It's ridiculous to me, but I agree with you. It's just Bayern Vucetich another few weeks, if you will, because Fecha FIFA, what is this FIFA fixture date of life? That's all it's doing.
Let's be honest. The question shouldn't really be, do Chivas get special treatment from the refs? It should be, do Chivas still deserve the special treatment that they get from the refs? Herc, in our production meeting, what did you call them? The what of Mexico?
My producer got very angry. I called them the Arsenal of Mexico, and he about hung up and almost reached through the phone. Yeah, he was very upset. He didn't want to talk about it anymore. He started attacking America. I have nothing to do with Club America. That's all Sebi. Yeah. It was a really, really strange conversation.
All right, we'll leave it there for now. Mauricio Pedrosa, thanks as always for the time. You can catch him Monday through Friday on ESPN Deportes on Ahora Nunca with Hercules Gomez.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets' signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Christian Pulisic is back at training with the team in Nashville. Of course, last week he was in quarantine after a positive COVID-19 test. Obviously, he has now cleared COVID protocols ahead of the match Thursday against El Salvador. Big, big, and very good news for the U.S., Herc.
Massive news. The biggest news you could have if you're a U.S. men's national team fan. Greg Berhalter himself, it's your best player, the face of the organization, the face of soccer in this country. He's ready to go. He is healthy, and he will be there.
Well, Christian Pulisic, no doubt one of the leaders on this U.S. team, but it is the start of the next qualifying cycle. So let's hammer down. Let's lock in who that leader should really be. A lot of discussions around who the captain for the U.S. men's national team should be. For these three games, with pretty much Herc, everybody in the pool at Greg Berhalter's disposal, who do you want to see wearing the armband?
Let me start by saying I absolutely hate this musical chairs with the captain's armband from Greg Berhalter. It drives me nuts. It should be cherished. It should be respected. It actually means something. You don't go passing it around like it's a carrot. Don't dangle in front of a player's face like it's a carrot. Like, hey, try harder. You can be the captain. Let's motivate these players. No. We've seen eight different, probably more different captains under Greg Berhalter. I'm going to throw some names at you. Will Trapp, okay, Tim Ream, Aaron Long, Walker Zimmerman, Paul Arriola. They've all been captains under Greg Berhalter. This needs to mean something. Now, if you're asking me who should be the captain, I've got only one name. One name only. That's Tyler Adams. When I look at Tyler Adams, I see the future. I see the future captain. I see leadership. I see a man who wants the responsibility. We've interviewed Tyler Adams before here at ESPN. We've ran YouTube and digital segments with Tyler Adams. I asked him myself, do you want to be the captain of this team? Yes. With all his heart, that's what he wants the most. When you talk about a player that is well respected, that has the attributes, that speaks to that, that plays with that conviction, it's Tyler Adams. There is nobody who can convince me that Tyler Adams isn't the future of the captaincy for the U.S. men's national team.
Okay, I love Tyler Adams, but only one choice? Only one choice? That seems a little bit exaggerated. Let me play devil's advocate here just on Adams real quick. The only knock on him that I can see is the availability.
Yes, correct.
Right? Like, he has not been around all that much with the national team. He's had a lot of injuries. I think you could even maybe say moving forward, there's some concerns about how injuries might impact his availability with the national team. I think beyond that, Herc, he wasn't a part of the, well, he was a part of it. but he wasn't as key a part of it as some other guys, that the kind of seminal moments that we had over the summer against Mexico. I think those moments are where your leaders are really born, and that's why I'm going to suggest first a guy like Weston McKinney, because I think we have seen Weston McKinney. If you want that fiery brand of leadership, you almost have to consider him, right? He's not just fiery, Herc, but we also see him keep his cool in those critical moments. I'll take you back. I mean, he's always getting choked by Mexican players, right? 2019 Gold Cup final, it's Andres Guardado. This past Gold Cup final, it's Hector Herrera. And yet, Weston McKinney keeps his cool. The Nations League final, not the Gold Cup final, it's him that sparks the comeback. Without him, I don't think the U.S. is even remotely in that game. It's really him off those set pieces that makes the difference. For me, he's an obvious suggestion if you know he's going to be in the lineup and maybe you have questions about Tyler Adams.
So there are different types of leaders. He's an emotional leader. You know those guys who are glue
Adams
guys
is an emotional leader, too.
Adams is a guy who knows exactly what to say, what to do in the critical moments. I see Weston as a guy that people love to be around. I see Tyler as a guy who's respected amongst the group, and if Tyler speaks, people listen. Weston is the guy you want to be around and everybody gets along with, so that's a different type of leadership. But Weston's big moments in the games, those big key game moments, that's an extremely important thing to have in a leader. So yeah, I agree with you on that sense, but everything screams Tyler Adams for me. He's just a guy who gets what it means to be a leader.
Speaking of big moments, what about the case for Christian Pulisic? Because I think we have to acknowledge that this is no longer like the teenage kid who's growing up, right? He has the huge penalty moment against Mexico. He has the shush the crowd moment against Mexico, which might also be bigger. He's rocking the U.S. soccer polo, or what was it, a hoodie, I guess, after they won the Champions League. This is a kid who is embracing more and more being the face of U.S. soccer. I go back to the Players Tribune article that he wrote a few years ago, where he basically guaranteed that this team would be in Qatar. Why not Christian Pulisic, Herc? Why not Christian Pulisic as the captain of this team?
This isn't a bad thing, but Christian Pulisic reminds me a lot of Landon Donovan. Landon had a lot of Christian Pulisic's attributes. He was a guy who not necessarily spoke up in front of the media or in front of the players that much. He was more actions on the field. And many people confused him just because they called him Captain America and he was the face of U.S. soccer as actually being the captain of the U.S. men's national team. That wasn't the case. Claudio Reyna was a captain when he was there, and then Carlos Bocanegra was a captain when he was there. And when they weren't around, Michael Bradley was the captain. He had way more times he wore that captain's armband than a player like Landon Donovan. There are reasons for this. It's not that he's not a great player. There are certain players with those attributes to lead, not only with the players, but with the press and with the coach in the critical moments. And he was a player that had an air for the spectacular, but he wasn't necessarily that captain to the players. So he's on the same scale as Landon Donovan, where he may be the face, he may be the shield, but I think there are probably three or four in front of him to be that actual captain.
Well, after some doubt, Christian Pulisic will be available to Greg Berhalter for these three upcoming matches. One player, Herc, though, that won't be available, late breaking news, Timothy Weah, who suffered a thigh injury over the weekend with Lille. I don't know how significant a loss this is, but you figure he would have probably gotten some minutes with the three games. It does open us up to another question. There's now an extra spot up for grabs. Do you think the U.S. should fill it? And who would you like to see get that last spot?
I'd love to see the U.S. men's national team fill it. And if they do give somebody the last spot and his club situation is sorted, let it be Matthew Hoppe. There are a few players who have jumped onto the scene like Matthew Hoppe has this summer. He had an excellent Gold Cup. And more than his play, it's his mentality. I really see few players on the U.S. men's national team with that mentality of, I don't care who you are, I'm running over you. I'm going to beat you. I'm going to win. He was not afraid in that final versus Mexico. How many times did we see him get into the Mexican national team player's face? This is a player who loves that moment, and we already know Greg Berhalter doesn't see him as a nine. He sees him more as a winger. So, if Tim Weah is not there, if Timothy Weah is not there, and you're going to give somebody that opportunity, let it be Matthew Hoppe. This is my vote to the U.S. men's national team.
You know I am the ultimate Matthew Hoppe stan for sure, but I'm going to throw another name at you. Cade Cowell. Okay, I know he's only 17 years old, but he's balling out right now for the San Jose Earthquakes. And more than anything, Herc, He is a Mexican eligible player. So, in the ever increasing arms race between these two teams, why not throw him an invite? Here's what Kate Cowles said in April. Quote, "It's whoever wants me more." What better way to get him in the fold than inviting him to some World Cup qualifiers?
That's exactly what I want to hear if I'm a fan. I don't know about he's balling right now. I think Cade Cowell has some very interesting attributes. He's only 17, and you have to take that with a grain of salt. Like, he could potentially be so much better. He's got 4 goals, 4 assists, and the last time he actually scored a goal was 4th of July. The last time he assisted a goal or played 90 minutes in a game was around mid-July. This is a player who I believe is coming off an injury and hasn't played very well or very much as of late. And when I got to see him up close in that Liga MX versus MLS All-Star game, he was a late scratch because he was actually slotted to start instead of Diego Rossi. Doesn't start, comes on later. He looked a little overwhelmed. He looked like the moment was a little big for him. Like maybe he got a little nervous. He's still 17 years of age. I'm not with this. It's an arms race. Let's cap him. Let's get it over with. I think you need to let these players decide. I think Greg Berhalter has been going about this the right way. I've been very critical of U.S. soccer, very critical of a lot of things Greg Berhalter has done. The player recruitment is not one of them. I think they're going down the right way. You have to nurture. You have to let these players breathe and decide for themselves. Don't just cap them to cap them.
All right, then. So the last round of World Cup qualifying in CONCACAF begins on Thursday. But we got you covered on Wednesday with some UEFA qualifiers. We got, this should be a good matchup, actually. Wednesday, 2:45 p.m. Eastern time. Norway against the Netherlands. That one on ESPN2 and streaming live on the ESPN app.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Let's turn our focus then to MLS, the good, bad, and the ugly from an incredible weekend, rivalry week, of course. El Tráfico delivers yet again. A spectacular game ends in a 3-3 draw, Herc, between LAFC and the LA Galaxy. What is it about this rivalry? It never, never lets us down.
Never lets us down. The producer and I were there. I brought my family to the game.
The producer, he's got a name, my guy. Okay.
Producer Beto, Señor Beto Peralta. He was there. We were with my family. My kids loved the game. I remember one time during the event, my wife looks over to me. She's from Mexico, Torreón, where Santos is at. She goes, "This would never happen in Mexico." I said, "What?" She goes, "Look at the amount of Galaxy fans and LAFC fans sitting together. It's a celebration, and they always, always come out and show out in front of their fans." It was a fantastic game. Honestly, I did not expect this type of game, especially since they're missing their two biggest stars.
Right? Hey, how about the Brian Rodriguez goal that we just saw before the Kevin Cabral goal late to equalize it for the Galaxy? Goal of the year contender or what?
Buscas.
Goal of the year favorite?
Buscas! Buscas! That's all I'm going to say about that.
Wow. Okay. Okay, fair enough. So it's a great game that ends 3-3. Nevertheless, in a draw, someone always goes home just a little bit happier than someone else. Or maybe one of the teams goes home just that little bit more disappointed. Herc, between these two teams, who do you think comes away more disappointed from sharing the points?
LAFC. It has to be.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they're at home. They went up 2-1 and then 3-2, only to see it waste away in the final minutes of another home game. Yes, another home game. That's now 8 home games where they've dropped points this season, and now they are winless in their last 8. Oh, also, we don't know the timetable on Carlos Vela. We don't know when Carlos Vela is going to be back, and he's been their best player. And now you're going to let us know, what, one of their best players may be leaving again soon, or maybe leaving now? Oh.
25 shots for LAFC. I just go back to last week, Herc, when you said who needed it more. I think we both agreed LAFC, not just because of position in the table. Right now, LAFC 11th in the Western Conference. You got the international break coming up. You've also got the end of the transfer window. And some reports today, actually, from our Jeff Carlisle. Diego Rossi could be moving. Apparently, Fenerbahce has opened up conversations with LAFC. So I feel like you look at an LAFC team that really needed some good news, Herc. They need some good news heading into this international break, and they didn't get it. And more bad news could be coming.
That's a huge, huge loss. I mean, obviously, you're going to make some money there, but Diego Rossi is my favorite player to watch in Major League Soccer. He's got all the tools to succeed in Europe. I am convinced of this. Every time I see this kid play, I leave away even more impressed. If they lose Diego Rossi, I don't care how much they make, that is a loss this season.
Right. You're going to have to lean on Brian Rodriguez, which up until now you wouldn't have said you could. But boy, that goal over the weekend might just change some opinions. All right, let's get to the bad. FC Cincinnati, boy. Okay, so they blow a lead in the Hell is Real Derby. Hurricane in spectacular fashion. They're up 2-1 in the 80th minute before two goals in 2 minutes from Miguel Berry sentenced FC Cincinnati to an 11th straight game, Herc, without a win.
Let me tell you, Hell is Real is the name of this Clasico. Hell is Real for these fan bases. 10-6, the winless streak for both before this game.
All right, so you know the name Miguel Berry because one of his brothers, Alejandro, is a researcher for us. Well, how about this interview they got to do on SportsCenter?
You know what, Miguel? I've got an idea. I have the perfect person to finish this interview.
Hi, Miguel. I got to say, Aunt Susie's going to be disappointed to see that you're not clean-shaven tonight. Not sure what you were thinking. So I got a couple questions for you. You know I do the stats here. First thing. Please forward this information to your agent. Among players with 90 minutes played this season, you average the fewest minutes per goal. So make sure you get a little bump in your paycheck by giving that information to your agent, okay?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Good to see you, brother. Good to see you.
But I got a question for both of you, the Berry boys on SportsCenter. What does being on the show to share this moment together mean to the both of you? First, Miguel.
I think it's just a demonstration that nepotism is still alive and well in the United States. No, but it's incredible. You know, he's been using company resources to give me tips and tricks in upcoming games and give me advanced statistics, and I owe him a lot. And it's just incredible to see him and to talk to him. I haven't seen him in a while, so it's good to see you.
Alejandro?
Yeah, hopefully we get to change that soon. Hopefully I get to see you in Columbus in October. It's fantastic. I know that our mom would be super proud of us.
Wow, what a moment for the Berry brothers, though. Awesome stuff. All right, to the ugly, Herc. Last Friday, dark day in MLS managerial circles. First off, Freddy Juarez stepping down at RSL. We would find out later to take a job as an assistant in Seattle. And then Mark Dos Santos dismissed in Vancouver. With Vancouver, eighth place in the Western Conference, but probably a bigger factor, they lost to Pacific FC of the Canadian Premier League in the Canadian Cup. So that hot seat, Herc, always hot in MLS.
Always hot. Vancouver's interesting because, yeah, you lose that game, but they were actually turning the corner. It's still a dumpster fire of an organization. In their history, they've only finished above ninth place just once. Since 2011, when they came into Major League Soccer, just once overall have they finished above ninth place. And then how bad do you have to be, or does the situation have to be, for your head coach to want to be an assistant coach somewhere else?
Yeah, not a great look for RSL as Freddy Juarez then choosing to move to Seattle. All right, so let's start a new segment here on Football Americas. We're calling it Five Aside, right? It can basically be any top five, but since we're just talking about coaches who have been dismissed or changed jobs, let's make this the top five managers on the MLS hot seat. Now, so the people will know, I pick the names, but Herc, you pick the order, and we're going five, which is the coolest hot seat, to one, which is the hottest hot seat. So who do we have here then at number five on our MLS coaches on the hot seat? None other than my good friend, Bob Bradley at LAFC, Herc.
No chance. Listen, I know LAFC's been struggling, but I find it very hard to think that LAFC is going to get rid of a three-time MLS Coach of the Year and one of the highest win percentages in Major League Soccer and the U.S. men's national team's history. I see more likely that Bob Bradley walks away from LAFC before LAFC walks away from Bob Bradley. And ojo, Chicago could be an option.
Wow, okay. Some good reporting from The Athletic. They reported that Bob Bradley is out of contract at the end of the season. So maybe to your point, we could see him move. I'm disappointed that you don't think that the seat is hotter here on Bradley, if nothing else for LAFC's ambition. They built a stadium downtown. They brought in Carlos Vela. They got no real hardware.
They're selling their best player today.
They got no real hardware. All you ever tell me about is the amazing atmosphere at Bank of California Stadium. Don't those fans?
What do you want me to do? You just sold my best
deserve a trophy? Don't they deserve to put some pressure on their coach? Number four, Phil Neville, who is, I mean, we got to give him some credit, right? They've kind of turned it around of late.
Okay, kind of. What did Miguel Berry say? Nepotism is alive and well in the U.S. Your best friend, David Beckham, there he is. And this isn't all on Phil Neville, but Phil Neville is the direct representation of this just atrocious front office disaster for Inter Miami. He's ostracized players like Rodolfo Pizarro. We've seen a little bit of hope for Inter Miami, but not enough. We have him number four.
So since they lost 5-0, to New England back on July 21st. They've played 8 games, Herc. They've only lost once. I mean, for a guy in his first season, that seems like a guy who's starting to get the hang of things
years.
In MLS.
4 more years.
We'll see. We'll see. With friends in high places, you never know what's possible. Number three, to Chicago. Rafael Vicky in his second season in charge. The Chicago Fire then in 10th place in the Eastern Conference, Herc.
I guess I should say congratulations. They just snapped a 19-game losing streak on the road. 692 days on the road without a win. No more, but still 10th place. 11 losses. Only TFC and Austin FC, an expansion team, have more losses than Chicago. And this isn't all on Rafael Wiki. What chaos this front office, this whole situation, the rebrand, the stadium, everything. Everything.
Yeah, I think that's the bigger point here, right? When you think of Chicago, you think of kind of a wasted opportunity. And this is a big media market with a huge soccer following. The Chicago Fire are not taking advantage of it. They're not capitalizing on it right now. That may change if you bring in a different coach. I don't know that it would. Number two, FC Cincinnati. We were just talking about how bad they were. Yap Stam, they are 13th out of 14th Herc in the East.
Listen, they've already let go of their general manager. The next logical choice is going to be the head coach, Yap Stam. 11 straight without a win for this team. They're not very good offensively. They're not very good defensively.
They're worse defensively.
Worse defensively. So what do we got going on here? What are we clinging to? What do we have going on? When are you going to call Dennis DeClose Cincinnati ownership and finally get somebody who knows what they're doing?
The only team behind them in the Eastern Conference is Toronto, which kind of tells you just about where you are. The other thing, too, is Yap Stam, I mean, iconic defender. They've shipped 37 goals this year. 37 goals. That's second worst in MLS. Like, if he can't figure that out, the rest of the field, is there any hope? I don't see it.
Tough.
I think he's a very, very safe number two on the hot seat. All right, who's number one? Oh, our good friend Dav Ramos down in Houston, not just because Houston is incredibly hot, but because they are terrible. They're last in the West.
Yeah, and this is probably unfair for Dav Ramos. Matt Jordan, the general manager, was just let go today, relieved of his duty. So if Matt Jordan's gone and a new GM comes in, what do you think he's going to do? 15 games without a win and he's going to stick with you? No, they are a problem. Can we start with their DPs? They're paying a defender over $1 million, and their other DP, an attacker, Darwin Quintero, is in the doghouse. We've not heard from him. It is just crazy what's going on in Houston, and Dav Ramos, well, he's on the hot seat.
Yeah, talk about markets that aren't being capitalized. I think you could make a good argument that Houston's another one. You mentioned the long winless streak. I think their last win was back in May. The other factor here,
Vancouver.
New ownership in Houston. You know how new owners are. They always want to put their stamp on things. So maybe
are you telling me James Harden's okay with this? James
Harden. Yeah, James Harden is the one that's going to be pulling the strings there.
Julian Green of Reuters then joins us here on Football Americas. Julian, how you doing? And on a scale of 1 to 10, rate my pronunciation of your current employers.
Everything good, thank you. I would give it an 8.
Hey! I take that.
Yeah, my man's feeling generous today. Okay, so let's get to it. You know, we just saw the video of a lot of your big goals during the run to get this team promoted. What was that run like? I mean, what's the feeling of getting promoted into the Bundesliga for this club?
Yeah, it's an unbelievable feeling. I mean, I had the chance to do it the second time in my career. Like the first time I did it with Stuttgart in 2017. But with Greuther Fürth, it was a different story. Like it was like no one really expect us to do it. So it was an unbelievable feeling, unbelievable season, and yeah, we are very proud of that.
You know, Julian, you exploded onto the scene at 18, really out of nowhere for a lot of people, and now you're 26, you're still very young. What has changed this season for you personally? Because you're scoring goals, 9 goals, you're putting up assists, you know, you're playing in a different position. What has changed for you personally?
The biggest thing what changed to other seasons, I think, is that we got a good plan, we got a good team, and of course a very good coach who gave us the plan he wants, how he wants to play, and the good thing is that it fits to my style of playing, and I think that was a big difference to all the other years. It doesn't start it pretty well, I would say, here in Fürth. Like the first year, we almost got promoted to, we almost went down to the third division, and after Stefan Leitl came to the team, everything changed, and also for me, it went in a different direction then.
You played in a lot of different roles. What do you think is your best position?
My best position is the 8, like in the middle. I can also play the 10 or maybe on the wing, but my best position is the 8.
Go ahead, Eric.
No, apologies. You talk about your best position. In this role in the Bundesliga, it's the 8, but you're scoring goals. Talk to me about the tactical presence of this. You said he's got a good game plan, your coach. What is the tactical responsibility for you getting those positions to score goals?
He always say like the position 8 is like a box-to-box player. So he wants me to be in the box and being dangerous in front of the goal, and on the other side be strong defensively, and that's the thing he wants from the 8. And I think last season was my best season with 9 goals and 2 assists in the league. So that's how he sees that role, and me personally also.
Julian, you talk about your you broke through with Bayern Munich, and you obviously had a very small role, right? Played a couple Champions League games, were on the reserve team. What's the difference between being a Bayern Munich player with a smaller role and then kind of the bigger role, the more veteran presence that you have now in your current club?
It's a big difference. I mean, at that time at Bayern, in my opinion, when I played there, they had the best squad they ever had, and so I was a very young player, so it was hard to compare with all these top stars at this time, and I got my playing time at Greuther Fürth, and of course I have a different role now. It's my 5th year now here in Fürth, and we have the second youngest team in the Bundesliga, so I have a big role here, and I want to show it on the field.
Let's stay there with that Bayern Munich team. You played under some you had experience with some very good coaches, Pep Guardiola, Carlo Ancelotti. You had Champions League experience, Club World Cup, Lewandowski, Thiago, Xavi Alonso, that type of player. Maybe it didn't go the way you wanted, but what did you take from that experience?
Almost everything. Like I had the chance to train with them every day, and yeah, it was, how I said, it was for me the best team they ever had at this time, and yeah, it was just the quality of training was just different. I remember when I went on loan to Hamburg after the World Cup, like it was like the first time I was in a different club who also played in the Bundesliga. And after some trainings there, I thought like, okay, it's a very big difference between Bayern and like Hamburg at the time. So I was a little bit shocked, like from the, like nothing against the quality from Hamburg, but it was like a big difference. Yeah, that was it.
What's it like playing under Pep? I mean, that's got to be a, for a player, kind of a dream, and then you get to do it. You know, what do you take away from that time under a manager that everybody says is, if not the best in the world, among the best?
Yeah, it was a very nice time. Like, it was a dream. I remember I played in the under 19 team at the time, and then Pep came and yeah, he wanted me to train in the preseason with the first team. So yeah, it was just a dream to train under him, to play under him, and he's a world class coach.
Julian, we've already mentioned age 18, a World Cup, you know, score a goal in the World Cup, Club World Cup, Champions League, Ancelotti, Pep Guardiola, the amount of quality you played with. But every footballer goes through these moments that are hard, that are difficult. What was the most difficult experience for you, you know, thus far as a footballer? Because you're still only 26 years old.
Hardest part, yeah, it was probably in Hamburg. Because yeah, how I said, it was right after the World Cup, and yeah, then Hamburg wanted me, and I thought it's a good it's the right step to go to Hamburg. And after 2 weeks, I think the coach who wanted me got fired, and yeah, since then they never really gave me a fair chance again. So yeah, I think I made like 5 games for them, and yeah, it was a pretty hard year in Hamburg, and yeah, it made me stronger.
Julian, you had a pretty good season last year, so much so that, you know how it is, whenever you start scoring goals, your name gets into the transfer links, the rumor mill. We heard a lot of it back here in the United States around Major League Soccer. Did you ever consider, come close to a move in MLS? Is that something that would have interested you at the time or somewhere down the road?
Yeah, MLS is always interesting. I mean, my dad still lives in the States, so it's always interesting, MLS. But right now, my focus is on Europe. How you said, I'm still 26, so I think I still have a lot of time to play in Europe and maybe also make the next step in Europe. And but of course, MLS is always on my mind, and you never know what will happen in the future.
What is the next step in Europe? What would it be if you could draw it up? You look at your career, where you might want to go. What would that dream next step be?
Right now, my next step is to stay in the Bundesliga with Greuther Fürth. I think that's the biggest goal for all of us this season, and yeah, also for me personally, just to improve my game also in the Bundesliga, and try to have the same impact in our game like I had last year in the second division.
You know, Seb brought up you being interested in Major League Soccer. It makes me think, there are some Major League Soccer teams that can use you. Has there been any contact with Major League Soccer and their teams to you or your camp?
There are a little bit of contact, but I don't really know about this contacts, but my agent told me about some interests, and how you said, they're very interesting teams, very interesting cities, and we will see.
What about the international level, the U.S. national team? Before we get into kind of the current, you know, I think your story, joining the team when you did is such an interesting story, especially in light of how many dual nationals we have on the team now. You know, there seems like every week there's a Mexican-American kid, a Colombian-American kid, a German-American kid who's being mentioned, you know, to choose. You had to make that choice. You had to file for the one-time switch from Germany to the U.S. I know it was a long time ago, but what do you remember about that process? What was it like for you as a on a personal level, you know?
Now when I think about it, it wasn't a hard choice because I remember I got invited in a training camp and it was in Frankfurt at that time. And after 1 hour I knew that I wanted to play for the US. I mean, everybody was very nice to me. I remember Clint Dempsey gave me a jersey with the, I think, the number 7. So it was a good move from them. And after 1 hour, sure to play for the US, and it was the right choice.
Let's talk about that decision from Jurgen Klinsmann to take you to the World Cup. It was a very controversial decision because Julian Green, this very young kid that a majority of people had not heard of or seen, goes to the World Cup over a U.S. men's national team legend, Landon Donovan. Talk to me about just how you felt in that moment. Was it difficult for you? Did you feel like you were being maybe unfairly portrayed? What were your feelings going in?
The feelings going into the World Cup, or that I...
Once the decision was made.
Like, once the decision was made, I just can't remember. I was just really happy. That was the only thing what was on my mind. Because at this time, we already were, like, in training camp. And, after that, we knew... This is the squad who goes to the World Cup, and I remember, when I heard it that I'm on the squad, I can't describe it. I was just happy, and I didn't think about some people who say, "Oh, he goes for Landon Donovan or something like that," because I think that's also not like it's not fair to say it like that I go for Len Donovan. So I was just happy.
Yeah, I bet you were happy when you scored against Belgium too. Walk us through that moment, because I mean, it's just like a classic World Cup moment. The kid gets his one shot and he comes good.
Yeah, it's the moment I will never forget. I think it was my first touch in the game, and was a pretty nice pass from Michael Bradley, and after that goal, I thought we still have the chance to make it 2-2, but at the end, I already said that we didn't make it, but if you look up,
it was against that Belgium team too. A very good team. Everybody that plays in a World Cup has this like pinch me moment, like, oh my God, I'm playing in a World Cup. I remember mine distinctly. Do you remember yours? Like, where were you? What made you realize like this is a World Cup and I'm in a World Cup? What was your moment?
It's hard to say because I think I came in extra time, so all the other players, they looked like they were very tired, and I was I was very fresh. So but when I saw the ball in the net, it was just a feeling, oh, I just scored in the World Cup. And so when I see the ball in the net, that was the moment when I thought, okay, it was a good goal.
Let's talk current national team. How close do you feel to the current U.S. team, to breaking into the 23? You know, we got the qualifying list coming out soon. Is that something that's on your radar? Are you kind of constantly looking to see if you're going to be involved?
Yes. for Greuther Fürth and, of course, get invited for the national team and help the national team. That's my biggest goal, and then we will see.
All right, Herc, maybe we should have given Julian Green some love as a potential Tim Weah replacement on the roster, huh?
Well, you can listen to the other 20 minutes of that interview right now if you want, or tomorrow, I should say, on the podcast.
Absolutely. 26 minutes with Julian Green. Speaking of interviews, on Thursday, Herc goes one-on-one with the greatest, Jorge Campos, here on Football America. Should be a great show as we preview all of the World Cup qualifying action.